advise you to get off the streets as quickly as possible. It'll soon be a war up there.
And we are, as a people, opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths.
I know for a fact.
And to secret proceedings.
Weapons of mass destruction.
I have a dream.
I take the threat very seriously.
A new world order.
Your government thanks you for your participation.
You are now listening to the world-famous Sofa King Podcast.
Please, read from sheets. I am Sofa King.
Sofa King.
Now repeat all very fast, please.
I am Sofa King.
Faster.
I am Sofa King.
No, not so fast. Loses meaning.
I am Sofa King with Todd.
You say funny things.
Hello and welcome to the recorded record of Brent slowly going insane.
Yep. I thought about that. I had a whole conversation about that a couple weeks ago. About how at least when we die, like, or like 1,000 years from now, they find the digital archive of this. And if history gets based off it, like the, what's the stallions or whatever?
Oh my God. The wild stallions.
This is the only archive that survives for some like catastrophic event.
So apparently Timmy invaded Asia.
They're all the... There used to be this really evil government that was up to no good. Like, they'll just believe everything
they measured say. History wow. by calling it.
That's actually a good
castle times.
Hey, oh man,
can we? Oh man, that'd be a really good book. Like, if we put together a book of our history, like the stuff we covered from the show.
Well, I did think about how cool it is. Like, if I this is pretty sad, but like if I die, my kids will have like hundreds of hours of dad. Like, it's me saying crazy stuff,
yeah.
and drinking swear, whiskey and cussing.
Good thing he's dead.
Yeah. But still, though, like, you know, most yeah, people
true.
Don't have that.
Yeah, like, that's yeah. true. Yeah, because, like, used to be, you know, in the 80s and stuff, early 90s, a lot of people videotaped everything.
You don't do it anymore. You know, it's on your phone.
I mean, you kind of do. Like, people do, like, but it's not, yeah, I don't know. Like, the,
well, no, it used
having
to be like,
physical tapes
well, no, it
different.
Used to be like if you had a camera, which was very expensive yeah. and only your rich friend had one.
Right.
And it was like, if there was a birthday party, they filmed the birthday party.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
they filmed for the full hour until yeah. the tape was dead.
Now it's like my grandpa had a camera.
Yeah, exactly.
So we had
now
tapes.
Every birthday party has like 18 random 9-second video clips yeah. from everybody's yeah. phones. You know, it's a
yeah.
different.
Yeah, it's a different style of filming and
scenario.
No, it yeah. made me realize I don't take enough pictures of my kids though, because I went to Mike's funeral. And there was all those pictures, and there was like the professional ones where they're in there in outfits and they're sitting mm-hmm. on the little rocking chair and they got a football or something and they're all dressed up. And I was like, people don't do the Sears mm-hmm. picture thing anymore.
No,
for a little while, Walmart had that place right in the front. Like when you walked in, there was always a baby getting mm-hmm. its picture taken, and they quit doing that.
Yeah.
And it's just
nobody
really,
does it. Yeah.
Kind of thing.
It's because everybody is a photographer now.
Yeah. Everybody has an SLR
Nikon.
And they're like downtown by yeah. a brick wall making, right. you know, doing right. those kind of outdoor pictures, or they're in the middle of the orchard.
No, I've got pictures of like kids, the softball pictures.
Yeah.
You know, like stuff like that. But
well,
yeah.
someone just shows up and does that, though, they kind of force it on you. The softball
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
School. Yeah.
Those are forced on you.
Those,
yeah. You need to get a green screen. Mm-hmm. And take fucking yeah. pimp ass pictures of your kids. Just take them sitting there, and then all of a sudden they're on the fucking prow of a pirate ship. Like, you yeah. know, they're suddenly on Mars next to the rover.
Those come
like,
out
you
cheesy,
need to,
though. It doesn't
no,
work.
Not no. if you do them well.
You gotta get costumes. Well. Yeah. Why am I putting this Eskimo suit on? Because it's cold right now.
Shut up.
It's 100 degrees. Shut your face.
You're an Eskimo. It's cold.
Yeah.
Did we figure out how to pronounce this?
Cask Isle.
I think it's just Isle.
You said it's Isle.
Yeah, Tyler. Cask Isle. Thank you to Christopher and Haley Purr. That has become like my favorite. It's the one that sits next to...
Everything yeah, has become it. Your favorite.
No,
is,
he's
just
really...
keep fucking drinking it.
He's really big on that and Greenspot. Those
that
are the
Greenspot
two
too,
the
yeah.
two that he's yeah. he's really into. Those I do like want to give a shout out. I want to give a shout out to Pat Solo, Patrick Jimenez.
He yes.
Did a legit... He's traveling through Europe right now, and he took a Sofa King sticker and stuck it up right next to what used to be Checkpoint Charlie, where the opening was on the wall between East and West Berlin.
Yeah.
And he took a picture of it, and you can see the picture of the sign for Checkpoint Charlie with an American soldier on it. And he tagged the sign.
I wonder how long it's
going to
stay there, but still.
I don't know. I just
there's other stickers
legit.
There, yeah. so it's probably going
to
be there.
I just wanted to give him a shout out. That was cool. So
yeah, that was rad, Pat.
Good,
thank
good
you.
Looking out.
Probably should have did that on the Tuesday episode.
Whatever.
So if you've got a dope place that you want to tag a sticker, let us know, and we'll figure out how to get you a sticker as soon as we get more stickers.
Yeah.
Yep.
In comes the request for stickers, not having stickers.
As soon as Brent gets stickers done.
Come on, Brent.
Now it's on me? No. No. I've been battling for like 2 months to get logos from Brad. If I could make logos, I would, but I suck. And Brad's opinionated about the logo. And if I made it, it would not be as good as what Brad makes. So
this is my last show anyway. People are rejoicing right now.
No, an equal amount would be pissed, Brad.
Maybe.
You would be missed and loved at the same time.
Well, I posted a thing on Instagram of some, I wanted enchiladas, and I realized that I didn't want to go to the grocery store, and then I realized I've never made homemade enchilada sauce, and then I looked up what goes into homemade enchilada sauce, and I made it, and it's fucking delicious, and I'll never go buy enchilada sauce again. And I made like a dirty rice, like with black beans and stuff, and then put the enchilada sauce in it, and I will, and this isn't just for the plug sake, but I made it, and I tasted it, and I was like, this is okay. And then I added the El Yucateco Caribbean hot sauce to it, and it was like fucking perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. I mean, it was delicious. It's the best enchilada thing I have had. And it wouldn't have happened without the.
It was worth Caribbean. Making the sauce separate, though.
Absolutely, yeah. It's so good.
You made red sauce.
Yeah, I like green sauce.
Yeah, enchiladas. We do green enchiladas at my house, but yeah. I don't know. You have to like make tomatillos. That's a pain in the
with
ass.
The red. You just start with a can of tomato sauce and you just add stuff to get it in to be.
My friends that I gave the run of hot sauce to that I had mentioned a week the back or whatever they're poor. Weevils. Yeah, they put it on their top ramen like the prisoners. my buddy Bob, he loves the Caribbean though.
Right.
He's like that is fucking. He's like it's smoky, kind of like it's sweet. It's good. What's the other one? Oh, the Chipotle too. Yeah, the Chipotle. Was that loud?
It was a little bit loud.
You were feeling it though.
You made me close my eyes.
Chipotle.
I usually close my eyes when I kiss you. Get it from all the way across the room.
Nope.
You know, I found out a fan contacted us named Lady Shark. And she said, what I got to do to get a pink shirt? I was like, dude, there might be a pink shirt in the busket. Like, let me go see. You better wear this size. And I was like, what size? You know, and they're like, large. I was like, oh, we have one pink shirt all sealed up in a dark side bag still. But I was like, I wonder if Lady Shark has anything to do with Lady Boner Shit. For some reason in my stomach, I just thought like Lady Boner Shit, Lady Shark. I bet it's like Lady Boner Shit's girlfriend or something. Totally Lady Boner Shit's girlfriend. I was like, that's rad. So I actually got to talk to her. She called because we don't have a website.
Can they both do the
yet.
Spinning shit kick?
Probably.
I hope so.
Blue Thunder. And
if they drink enough Blue Thunder with Yohimbe.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure Yohimbe is like a Chinese herb for boners.
Maybe.
Yeah. Did he have a boner when he did the spinning shit kick?
Maybe Lady Boner Shit was fucking and just shit is fucking just if you shit recall, all over the room.
Wow. If you recall the story, the specific detail was I knew he was going to take his towel off.
So I left.
So if he had a boner, that is a detail I'm not.
I want to see that. I want to see that exact scene in anime. That's what I want to see. Like fucking like Dave's like, you know, the whole like he's not moving, but the air is moving around him and the shit is just everywhere.
Yeah.
That's I just want to see it.
But I was clear.
Oh, but I facilitated a transaction over the phone, a credit card machine all antique style. Actually punched the buttons and shit. Got it all mailed off.
I haven't done this in a while, but
it was it's not exactly high tech considering I have a computer shop, but I know we've been promising for a long time. I think the website's pretty close now.
So I don't know. I've given up on that. That's been since April.
I've given up all hope.
I got the cover art all. He asked for content and cover art now. So he actually asked me for something on our end. So I got the cover art all together. And there's a few things like the bios, but he has access to get it. You're not going to do that?
No.
It says all kinds of cool stuff about you.
No, we took him down for a reason.
Oh, you don't want it up?
No.
We better
don't need him.
You guys have seen the behind the stage right now.
That's right.
That's how business goes down.
That's right. Yeah.
Listen to the show, you figure out who we are.
That's right.
If not.
I was going to say something about Yucateco. I have a long lost stepsister from a previous marriage that I'm technically not related to anymore, but my brother is. So it's complicated.
Yeah, that's very complicated.
White families.
It's some Jerry Springer shit for sure.
White family problems. Yeah.
Her name's Lisa, if she's listening. But she had posted a picture of XXX and said chicken for dinner or something. But it was just a picture of Yucateco. And my mom chimed in because my mom, although she knew about Yucateco, I don't know what her thing was. I think she only has those bottles I took to the cabin. And the other day when I half-assed president and my sister and brought those bottles in, she ate it with the pizza. And then she woke up the next day freaking out. because she thought she had black sauce and realized that it was a gift for someone else. She just got to have some. So my mom's like turned into a super El Yucateco cheerleader. And when she posted that picture, she's like, oh, my son has a podcast and he's sponsored by that hot sauce and this and that, blah, blah. The girl's all, or my, the girl, my sister's like, man, this story's sucking. My sister was like,
no.
My it's sister gold, was like, Brandon. No shit. Where do you think I heard about the hot sauce? You know, and I thought that was funny.
My sister, my lover, my cousin, my mom, like all these things are in there. It's good. This is gold.
My sister, cousin, man.
I just like the timing where at like 98% completion of the story, you said this story sucks. And then still, like if you would have said it at the 80%, you would have recovered. Nah. But like you were like, wow, this story sucks. And then one more thing to end.
It would have been better if I just quit.
Let me add more shitty shit to this shitty story.
Yeah, if I just said I quit.
Spinning shit kick right at the end.
Yeah, we should have quit on spinning shit
that
kick.
Was a real was spinning shit kick.
So, that's a new thing.
The problem is, Dave, we didn't get away from it. Right. We're sitting right here.
There's
happened.
Shit on your shoes right now from my story.
Yeah, shit on my Jordans. Damn it.
Somebody used, I'm going to think while you guys talk, but someone said a phrase that it's become a thing that we say that they use. I don't remember what it is, though. So it's another bad story. Spinning shit kick, go.
Okay.
It's another bad story. Spinning shit kick, go.
So today's topic, I want to thank Leif Walsh. He wanted us to talk about Howard Hughes, and he specifically wanted us to talk about the crazy CIA connection with the Project Azorian, which I'll talk about at some point, but wanted us to talk about
the Russian submarine.
Yeah.
I know the least about that, but I knew what it was.
Yeah. So shout out to him. Thank you for the topic. We're getting into Howard Hughes. So what's your impression on Howard Hughes?
Well, sad he died of breast cancer. I thought that was odd.
That is weird. I didn't even know guys could die from that. No, he didn't die from that. Yeah. No, you know what was funny for me, funny and sad at the same time, is that like it so hit home. That's why Brad made that joke about me going crazy, is because it's a slippery slope and it was happening.
Like, let's talk about that. We were discussing a gi that he got from a guy that I know from jiu-jitsu, and he's like, oh
man,
he's James's new roommate. Oh, did you know James's roommate died?
And I'm like, 10 second Tom, dude. I disassociated.
I'm like, are you fucking kidding me right now, Brent? Are you kidding?
Brad's talking about a friend, Mike Money, that passed away. But it's because I went to the funeral and I didn't see you. I just weeks passed and I was talking about jiu-jitsu. I just slipped. It was one slip. I know that you know that Mike died.
Yeah, it's a slippery slope.
Yeah.
That's why. This is where the crazy is
combined
going.
With, I don't remember breakfast. I'll admit that. You guys laugh, but honestly, it's a little scary.
We're laughing at you, not with you.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
It's.
Somebody actually outside and just in life asked me about the dollar ritual at Dagny's because they know about my OCDs from the podcast.
Yeah.
I realized it hit home. Yeah. Usually it's like a fan somewhere else. I'm like, no, I'll never see these people. They'll never know my embarrassing OCD.
And that's why I say, like, you're like, this is becoming my new favorite whiskey. No, it's just becoming you have to have that because it's built into you now.
No, enjoy the flavor of this. I know. Have several bottles here. It's not that.
I know. It's getting harder to choose.
That's right.
Bad things are going to happen.
Much as Brent, we will slowly explore the decline of Howard Hughes's mental state as we talk about it. So he was born December 24th, 1905, and he was born to a wealthy family already. He wasn't some self-made person. His father, Howard R. Hughes Sr., was a Harvard dropout, and in the 1900s, in 1901, when oil was discovered in Texas for the first time, tons of people moved down there to start looking for oil, try to stake a claim, try to get rich. And he dropped out of Harvard and went there to try to do the same exact thing. And he wasn't having a whole lot of luck finding oil. And one of the reasons was he couldn't get through the ground to get to the oil.
Right.
So he invented a fishtail drill bit, which I have no idea.
I was curious to ask Brad, like, is Hughes Company or Summa, is that anything in the oil industry as far as tools go? Is that still a relevant thing?
Baker Hughes.
Yeah. Does that have to do with Howard Hughes? Probably, huh?
Oh, yeah. Baker Hughes.
Because yeah. I saw the bit and I was like, yeah, that's like an oil filled bit.
And it's probably like a paddle bit, you know, like something.
Yeah, it was like, you know, that action.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he invented a bit that didn't exist before that would get through the earth easier to get to oil. And apparently he still wasn't having a whole lot of luck finding oil. Like right. he developed this great way to get down to it, but he couldn't find it. And then all of a sudden everybody else saw his technology and wanted it. And he had the really good idea of leasing it.
Yeah, the Microsoft Bill Gates idea. I'm not going to sell this bit to you. I'm going to lease the bit. Yeah. Which is still the way it works, right? That's what Brad does. You provide tools to rigs, right? Like you show up with those tools because they don't want to buy it. It's easier to rent it.
Well, they buy it. It depends on what it is. Yeah. If it's a reusable,
right.
Like drill bits, like the way, like the fishtail bit, like they would take that, they would drill with it, and then at some point it would need to be rebuilt.
Right.
So you have a company who rebuilds them.
Right.
Or so like the company could own it and get it rebuilt, or you just buy new ones. Like, yeah, it's all different ways, but yeah, most, used to be the oil companies would own, like they own the rigs, they owned all the tools, they own, you know, people work for the oil company, and slowly, due to liability issues, the companies would start, oh, okay, now no, this rig company owns the rigs. This tool company owns the tools. And if something goes wrong, it's their fault.
Right.
And you know what I mean? So like just the natural progression of things, you know, so now the oil company owns the oil and everybody else comes in and gets the oil for them.
I didn't know if leasing tools was still a thing. Like if they lease tools, I thought that was smart.
They don't lease, but it's rentals. Right. Yeah. It's all rentals. Right. So yeah, drilling, any drilling. Yeah. It's all rentals. So you have rental companies that rent tools.
And that's since 1901 when Hughes first invented some good stuff. And then he got into mining and helping miners, get better tools to get stuff out of the ground. And then he started acquiring mines, and then he started to finally acquire oil wells. So he built up quite a fortune. And so this is Howard Hughes' dad. Howard Hughes' mom was a woman named Aline Stone Gano. And one thing that I read was that she was like totally obsessed over his health, and she was worried about polio, and that on a daily basis, she would inspect his body to look for signs of polio, to look for signs of sickness. And like, she was like super, super germaphobe herself. And she was always worried about the health of her son.
Have you watched Aviator? Have you seen that movie?
Not in a million years.
I saw it a long time ago.
I liked it. I just didn't.
Well, yeah, like, Leonardo DiCaprio's good, you know. So
they portrayed that event and that characteristic of his mom being so like cleanly as a big part in his life. Like he carried this little bar of soap like in a can. I don't know how much of that movie is, you know, dramatized, but it seemed like it was pretty accurate because I watched the movie and then going through the research, it lined up. I mean, they left some of the things out about some of the business ventures, and it focused a lot on the aviation and whatnot. But as far as like the cleanliness thing, he would have flashbacks of his mom giving him a bath and like the standing tub and having him spell quarantine over and over. And as a nervous tick, when he would have one of his things, he would start to spell quarantine and flash back to that event of his mom bathing him. So I don't know that there's an official like autobiography or if it was ever written on paper that event was significant
that happened,
or if that's like a movie event. But yeah, it seemed to play a role though, her being so worried about germs and cleanliness.
Right. Yeah. And I read in multiple sources that was the case of her, and that was what she was like. He was a really gifted kid. Howard Hughes was. It wasn't just that he inherited a bunch of money and got lucky. Like he was a really, really smart guy. He was the first licensed ham radio operator in Texas at the age of 11, and he had built his own ham radio in order to do that. I guess at age 12, he made it into the newspaper in Texas because he took a steam engine from one of his father's garages, disassembled it, and then reassembled it on a bicycle. So he had a motorized bicycle.
I heard that steam engine, though. Did he convert it somehow so it ran on gas? Like
that's maybe. Weird. I have maybe.
I'm sure
it was
he didn't
just
have like a coal fire.
I have no idea.
Box on the
but
back.
He took a steam engine and somehow converted it to make a motorized bicycle, and he would ride around on his motorized bicycle.
Yeah, there's a picture. You can see the picture online.
So, I mean, smart kid, obviously. He started doing flying lessons at the age of 14, which again, I think speaks to the wealth of the family more than anything else, because that would be pretty expensive in freaking 1919 to be flying. I mean, how many planes were there in the first place?
I actually flew a plane at age 6 or something, I think, but who's keeping track?
Right.
That's the truth, though. I really did do that. But I was just like, here, hold the wheel.
Yeah, hold the wheel,
I'll
kid.
Sit here in a small plane. And then I threw up everywhere, for the record. I totally got airsick and yacked, but I did fly a plane at a very young age.
Apparently he was good enough at golf that when he was a teenager, he used to play with like the golf greats of that time.
Right.
And the articles I read said a couple of names as examples. And I was like, oh, three white guys from 1912. I've never heard of before, but
what's their names?
What's that?
You have their names?
No, I don't. I didn't jot them down. But apparently he was so good at golfing as a teenager that he was good as anybody on the pro tours. And again, I think that speaks to coming from a very wealthy Texas family. Like, he would have been growing up golfing. That would have been his lifestyle. But so his mom dies in 1922 from a bad pregnancy. And then his dad dies in 1924 from a heart attack. And then that means he inherits all of the wealth and the businesses from his family.
Apparently 75%.
75%.
I couldn't find where the other, who got that.
No, you're right. I think it was a business partner got the other 25%, but his father's entire holdings went to him. So it was 75%. So, you know, in 1924, at the age of 18, he's a multimillionaire, when multimillionaire is unheard of, and it's 1924. I mean, he's just rich as fuck.
Weird, because I don't understand. It said at age 19, he was emancipated or whatever to be a legal minor, but like, was the minor age?
Yeah, I read
different?
That too.
Probably 21.
Maybe it was 21 back then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. So he could, you know, be his own entity and be an adult and do what he needed to do. I thought that was weird. So they must have changed that age at some point.
Yeah. And then he was going to Rice University at the time, but as soon as he inherited the money, he said, fuck this. And he moved to Hollywood. And he
wrote a will at age 19 too.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. He wrote a will and put in it something to do with like a medical research laboratory. Like if he died, the money would go to that because of the death of his parents at a young age.
Right.
It rung with him and he made sure that the money, a large portion of the money would go to a medical institute on behalf of his.
And he started Hughes Medical Institute, and it's still a thriving
entity. He also used it for some cool tax tricks and stuff too.
Yeah, I'm sure he did. Yeah. Cause I even read recently that currently the Hughes Medical Institute, I think this was like in 2011, their endowment, like the money that they had backing them, was currently worth something like $16.8 billion.
God.
So even to this day, it's a massive, expensive, medical institute that's researching the things that Howard Hughes was interested in. But at this point, he heads to Hollywood, 1920s, golden age of Hollywood, all the glamorous movie stars, that whole scene. And this age and this persona, repeatedly, Stan Lee, the creator of Marvel Comics, says that this right here is what he based Tony Stark, aka Iron Man, on.
Oh, wow.
This like young, dapper, a millionaire who inherited his father's company but doesn't really have anything to do with it, which is exactly what Howard Hughes did. He inherited all the oil business and said, you guys keep doing what you're doing, I'm gonna be in Hollywood spending it. Yep. He wasn't involved in the business. He just trusted people to manage it for him. And he was just the ultimate playboy, drinking, dating gorgeous. I was going to make a list of the starlets that he supposedly dated, because I was trying to find how many times he had been married. Three times. And I was like, who did he marry? And I found the three people he married. I have them somewhere in my notes. I'm sure I'll get to it eventually.
He
never married Catherine Hepburn.
Well, he was with her though.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I looked and there was a list of a website, and I was going to write down all the names, but it was 47 starlets were on this page.
Wow.
And every single one of them, there was a photo of them. They're all like 1920s bombshells. They were all in the movies.
He had that look
stars.
On his face like, I banged her.
He was just,
he hung out at the Playboy Mansion.
He dated every single one of them. Like,
well, there was
he
a
was
scene
just
in the movie Aviator that like a waitress walks up to the table and he just says, how does this make you feel if I touched you right here? Like, and just starts touching her leg. He's like, I want to learn everything about you and I want to be able to pleasure you. Would you let me do that? And she was like, I'm off in 30 minutes. And the dude at the table was like, what just happened?
Fucking player, man.
Yeah, he's a Jedi mind tricks. Man.
Just like handsome, you know, he's got the little Tony Stark pencil mm-hmm. mustache. He's just handsome and rich.
That mustache actually didn't come around until later, though. That was to hide a scar from that plane crash.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
He had some serious scars from the plane crash, and he started doing that mustache later.
Was that the 1946 plane crash? Or because he crashed a lot.
Not the beat field. It was not the
and don't fly with this guy.
Yeah.
It was the one with the spy plane, that one with the crazy spy wing in the back.
Because he crashed a lot because he tended to be his own test pilot. They were building like insane, no one has ever built a plane like this before, and he was just like, I'll fly it.
Right.
Or everybody else was like, fuck you. Well, I'll do it.
No, it was also because he didn't want them to get the glory, because the first run in that plane that he made with the flush rivets, he beat the record.
Right.
And he's like, I don't want that guy to beat the record. Yeah, like, someone's going to beat the record, it's going to be me.
No, he beat a lot of world records on flight. That was kind of one of his things. So he starts doing his own thing, and in 26 he starts producing movies. And I wish I could see this. He just because the name alone sounds so awful. The first movie he made was a movie called Swell Hogan.
Oh yeah.
And it said that it was so
porn.
Like it was so bad that no one would release it. So his first, his first endeavor into film was a film that was so horrible, no one would ever release it. And it was a piece of shit.
It's actually what Hulk Hogan is basing his character off.
That's right. He was so swole that he would tear his shirt off.
Mm-hmm.
But then his
first name,
his second Swole film,
Swole Hogan was before he was Hulk Hogan.
It's just a bunch of like, ooh, yeah, brother.
It was before he went to WWF.
Maniacs out there. Yeah. And he screamed.
It was
really ahead of its time. No one knew what professional wrestling was. The movie
during his
they were like, no, these guys in these little shorts and boots, no.
It was
like,
during the midget wrestling circuit when he was touring through Mexico. He was called Swole Hogan.
That's right.
Swole Hogan.
But then I believe his second film was a film called Two Arabian Nights, which won an Academy Award.
It was actually Everybody's Acting in 1927, and Arabian Nights came out in 1928.
So Everybody's Acting was his second film.
Okay. Hey Dave, fuck you.
Well, that was a fuck you, but a well-earned fuck you. Yeah. But so his third movie then is Two Arabian Nights, which wins an Academy Award. And then he does other stuff. He does the original Scarface. He produced that film, a movie called The Outlaw. And then like his biggest one was he did a World War I epic called Hell's Angels. That was about pilots.
And if you watch the movie Aviator, it's amazing. Like if that portrayal is accurate in any way, the crazy things he went through to film that movie. Like he goes into like a big Hollywood and asks one of the other movie guys, like the competition says, hey, I need to borrow two cameras. And he's like, yeah, we don't usually let the competition borrow cameras. He's like, how many cameras you got? And he's like, well, 24, I need two more. And they're like, 24? And all these guys start laughing because he's pouring all this money. Like he ends up spending $4 million.
$4 million.
Hell's Angels. He gets all the way through the film and they have this party and celebrate that like he's finished filming finally. And then the guy's like, could you ever think you're going to finish? He's like, you know what? That's what they want. He's like, we'll start tomorrow. And he's watching a film with audio and he redoes the whole movie for sound.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the first movie with sound comes out.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, got to make sound on this one now.
And he hires a meteorologist from like UCLA, like snipes him. Like he would just find people. He'd be like, whatever they're paying you, I'll double it. He didn't ask what they were making. He said, whatever you're being paid right now, I'll double it. You work for me now.
Right.
Yeah. He would just say, you work for me now and say, I need you to get on this and walk away. And that would be it. It was impressive.
Right. You didn't say yes or no. It's like you're getting paid double. Do what I'm telling you.
Start now.
They filmed all those scenes. They hired all those pilots. They did all this stuff. And he's like, it looks like they're standing still. He's like, we need something for perspective. We need clouds. So he hires a meteorologist just to find clouds. And it takes 2 years before they get in a location where there's clouds.
Yeah. So that they can get a perspective on the
perspective to make the speed. Look at the ground fast.
Yeah. Yeah. So it cost $4 million. At the time, it was the most expensive movie ever made. Three pilots died while filming because the whole thing was about like World War I aces having combat. While they were filming it. He crashed a plane.
He rode in the plane with a camera. Like there's a scene in the movie at least where a camera gets knocked off the top. So he grabs one from underneath and just holds it up and starts filming again. And because
he would be in the planes when they were filming, he would fly some of the planes and he crashed at least once on the filming of it. And the film was a huge commercial success because everybody's like, holy shit, nothing like this.
I wonder if he has the record for surviving planes. plane crash. Or
I don't
something.
Know.
And I don't know, but he has chronic pain from a plane crash.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or from multiple plane crashes.
Yeah. Just like, yeah, crazy.
But, and I wanted to see it. I mean, and I even know that like the term Hell's Angels, because of pilots, ends up after World War II, when retired pilots come back from the war and they don't know what to do with themselves, they start riding motorcycles. They start calling themselves Hell's Angels because of this movie.
Yeah.
So him naming this movie Hell's Angels is why the biker gang Hell's Angels is called Hell's Angels.
I wonder if Hell's Angels know that. Like, how many of them actually know the origin?
I'm sure they do.
I'm sure they do.
They learn an origin story?
Because it started after World War II when all the pilots started riding bikes because they wanted that freedom again.
We should do an episode on Hell's Angels.
Yeah, we should.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, we should. We'll get shot in a biker bar.
That we frequent.
Yeah. so often. But yeah, so his film career becomes very successful, and that's one that he's actually interested in. Meanwhile, the mining, the oil, the tool leasing, all these other things are still happening completely autonomously and just making him money hand over
fist.
And
that movie made $8 million, so he doubled his money.
He doubled his money. So no one's exactly sure how much money that Howard Hughes had. Because
actually, he didn't make any money, right? So he made the $4 million back he spent. Now he's still had $4 million that he didn't spend. No, you just got $4 million back.
Yeah, you got $4 million.
Yeah,
back.
Double his money.
Yeah,
though,
double his money.
Yeah.
But he made $4 million.
People are estimating that at the height of his wealth, he was worth about $1.5 billion in a time where there weren't billionaires.
Yeah.
Like, he was one of the wealthiest people on the planet, and he was. I mean, I look at someone like Richard Branson or Elon Musk or people like the modern day people who have this money and want to do crazy stuff and are directly involved in the project, and it's like they pay. In comparison to this crazy bastard.
Yeah.
I thought about Richard Branson a lot. Like, I was researching. I was like, it's kind of like that, but more badass. Like, it's crazier. Like, people aren't like that anymore.
Right. Like, no, like, he's
I mean, Richard Branson's the closest comparison though, of like flying the plane, trying to break the record, but he always like hired a dude and like rode in the plane. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Right.
Like, this dude was flying.
This dude was just flying this. He was like building experimental aircraft and being like, I'll fly it.
He modifies that one and runs off like compressed oxygen. And there's not even like a hatch over him, and flies like from all the way to Paris when no one had done it, with an oxygen mask on, which no one had done. And by himself.
And flight stuff that he comes up with, he invents retractable landing gear. He invents pressurized cabins.
I think they had retractable landing gear 5 years prior to his plane. I did read that.
Oh, did you?
Somewhere, a fighter plane. He kind of based it off of another plane called, called a mono wing. Cause they were sitting there, they spent $500,000 on a bi-winged plane that had this crazy engine, but the structural integrity of the plane couldn't hold up because of the size of the engine. And he's like, the top wing will fall off. And it was like, he had this epiphany. He was like, let it. He's like, we'll make a mono wing. Let's start over. He's like, we spent $500,000 on this plane. He's like, I don't care. Knock the top wing off. And then they start going for it. Then they build the whole thing. He's like, nope, redo it. The rivets are too big. Like, he just kept redoing it. Doesn't matter how much money.
That's
so much money. You could just do that.
And that was... That mindset ultimately starts getting him in trouble with the government, because during World War II, he starts taking government contracts. And since his policy is that's not right, fuck it, start from scratch, redo it. Mm-hmm. And he keeps spending more money and taking more time. So a lot of the times when the Air Force would approach him and he would get a military contract to make a new plane that the military needed, he would operate on that same mindset.
It's not right.
I don't really care. Yeah. Scrap it. More money. Change it. You know, I don't really care when it's done. It's going to be done, like, when it's perfect. And the government's like, we need this shit right now. And
we're losing the war.
You're like, way over budget. Yeah. Like, so that mindset worked for the crazy innovations he was doing.
And a lot of those deadlines were missed due to indecisiveness, because his OCD would kick in. And like, there was a scene on that where they showed for the Spruce Goose, which was called the Hercules or whatever. They were held back because he couldn't pick the steering wheel. There was like, I need to see the steering wheel. Show me the blueprints. They're like, the wheel? Are you kidding me? We're talking about this again? They had like 30 wheels out and he has hands on. He's like, it's just not quite right. Like, just little tiny intricacies of things that he couldn't make decisions on because his OCD was kicking in.
And he
wasn't happy with it.
There was an incident where in one of the films that he was producing, the actress Jane Russell had a blouse that kept having a flaw in the way the blouse looked. And he finally figured out that the flaw in the blouse wasn't from the blouse. It was from her bra. So she had
one bigger titty than the other one.
He completely redesigned this new underwire bra that would fix the problem with the way it looked in the blouse, and like just designed new underwear. Yeah. And then like, that's what everybody started wearing because it was a better bra. Yeah. And he designed it because he didn't like this one shot in one film. Yeah. And he didn't care. Like in a modern day studio, like to just have the producer say, stop, we're done. We have like, yeah, until we get this bra covered on this one shot, like production is suspended.
But he had
like
the money to halt.
Yeah. He had the money to halt. Who gives a shit? This is what we're doing. We're doing it.
It was really cool. They did an example of that in that movie. I know I'm quoting a movie that's not real, but it's highly accurate, yeah, based off the stuff from what I researched and seeing the movie. They did that scene where he's drawing all these like schematics and all these designs, and there's this curvature. You see all this stuff, and they're talking to him about the plane construction and costs and getting aluminum and some of the movie production. And all of a sudden he holds it. He's like, this is what we need. We need this. And you think he's talking about drag on a wing or something. And all of a sudden you realize like, it's a titty, like it's a bra. Like he's designing a bra. He's like, we need this. He's like, I need smooth, like, and they called them mammaries or something weird. But I was like, mammaries. It wasn't always boobs and tits. It's called mammaries. I was like, that's horrible.
Put this on and cover, yeah, your mammaries.
But he just designs some high tech bra and hands it off, and then says, move on this, buy the aluminum, build the plane, sell the hotel. Like he was just constantly just doing business transactions, yeah, and multifaceted, yeah, in doing
crazy.
So.
And again, I'll just kind of say it again. It's really Tony Stark.
Yeah.
Like, when you watch the Iron Man movies and he's like, oh, I like this place, we should buy it. Oh, fuck that guy, buy his place. Like, he was just like, he had so much money and he would just buy things on a whim and make them more profitable and make even more money.
Or to the point, at one point he was staying in a hotel and they were trying to be like, you can't stay here anymore, you need to get out. He just bought the hotel so he didn't have, yeah, to leave.
That was yeah, the hotel he lived in the most. I think it was the Sands.
For like 4 months.
It was in Las Vegas.
Yeah. It was in Vegas, but yeah, he had been there. And he was living in, but they wanted to give away the room because this isn't like, he's not a high roller. Yeah. He doesn't gamble.
Right.
Like if we have high rollers in this penthouse, they're going to spend a ton of money. Yeah. He's just paying for the room. And, he just kind of replied by saying, I'm going to buy it. And he spent $13 million and bought the hotel so he could live in the penthouse.
Yeah. He's done that. It's like multiple hotels. He would buy it and then live in the penthouse. I think that was,
it was the Desert Inn.
Did you see the thing where he got obsessed with Baskin Robbins?
No.
He got obsessed with Baskin Robbins ice cream, I think, while at that hotel that he bought and stayed at for 4 months. And so he had his staff, he's like, he wanted banana ice cream and from Baskin Robbins, a very specific one.
Yeah.
And then they went to go get it and they found out that it was discontinued. So they bought 200 gallons of the Baskin Robbins banana ice cream. And then when they finally got it all settled and got it to him, he decided he was over banana ice cream. He had grown tired of it. And so he wanted chocolate marshmallow, and they had to give away banana ice cream for a year. And then there's actually, rumor has it that there's still banana ice cream in the freezer of that kitchen. And they said, and it's most likely true that there's still banana ice cream in that freezer as like a memento, like for a story.
Right. One of the big five gallon.
Yeah.
It's like a 5 gallon.
They show him in the movie too, walking around eating ice cream out of a carton, like to pay homage to that.
See, I like the Baskin Robbins mint and chip, and I asked him how much was it to buy one of those things, and it's like fucking $150 or some shit.
That's
like
a shitload of ice cream.
Yeah, it's a lot of ice cream. Yeah. Maybe it's 8 gallons. It's a big cylindrical. It's big,
like bigger than a 5 gallon paint bucket. 8 gallons.
It's that. Yeah,
they're, yeah, like, it's bigger than a 5 gallon.
Where would you put that? You have a freezer like that in your house?
I don't know. I was just
buy a freezer.
buy it and then figure it out.
Yeah,
you
know
what I mean? You got about 2 hours to figure that shit out.
You like huddle into Walmart and you like fucking like take over a freezer section. Yeah. You're like just standing there like waiting like fuck,
leave me alone. I'm thinking
50 gallon drum full of ice.
Touch my fucking ice cream.
So you're halfway to Howard Hughes already. But yeah, so in the air thing, so he starts Hughes Aircraft Company in 1932 and he sets tons of records. He designs a plane called the H-1 Racer, and it gets the fastest speed of 352 miles an hour in 1935.
That was his first, that was the monowing with a retractable thing. That's the one he kept making him go back, and all the planes had rivets, and he's like, they built this whole thing and there's like biting their nails looking at him, and he's like, nope, they need to be flush. You need a recess, and they have to take it because it's small pieces of metal they wrap. They didn't have this one sheet of metal like we have. Now it was just pieces. It's like patchwork. Yeah, panels.
Right.
But they did it smooth and finally he was happy.
And it broke the record. And I even read that there was a guy named Jim Wright. And in 2002, I guess the because they only built one of the racers,
right.
And it was at Air Museum. And in 2002, a guy named Jim Wright did scans of it to get the exact dimensions, to get everything.
Try to build one.
Took it back. He did build one.
Nice.
And he flew it, and he broke Hughes's record in it the first time he flew it. And again, to show you how crazy Howard Hughes was, when Jim Wright flew it a second time, he crashed and died.
Oh shit!
In Yellowstone.
Well, they told
it's like, because that's how fucking dangerous the airplane was.
They told Howard Hughes, like, he's like, it only has two runs because we're trying to keep it light. He's like, don't worry about the speed record. We just need to see if it'll fly and how it handles. And like, knowing like he's not going to listen, he just kept making passes trying to beat the record until it ran out. And that's when he crashed in that beet field.
Right.
And then it looked like he was dead because he was covered in beet juice. But it was just it was beet juice. It was bright red. It's like, oh god, there's blood everywhere. No, it's just beets.
He was crazy about the shit. He beat the transcontinental U.S. speed flying from Burbank to Newark, New Jersey, in 1937. He flew around the world in a record of 3 days, 19 hours, and 17 minutes. And when he came back, there was like a ticker tape parade, and everybody like did all this stuff. And apparently, when he took off, because he was a fucking player, when he took off from Burbank, he flew directly over Katharine Hepburn's house and like tipped the wing at her to like salute her, and then did his flight, you know, because he was
there's
a fucking
scene
player.
Where I don't know how real it is, but he lands where she's filming and like lands on one of those water planes and like rolls up to the beach, gets out, takes her to golf. So yeah. I don't know if that really went down like that.
It probably
they did for a long time.
Because he was a pimp.
Yeah, he just hops off and he's like, God, she talks so weird though. Did she really talk like that?
Yeah, she
was very like that. She's like, no, my father's talking about soft.
Yeah,
no, it's like that rhythm of
falafel, falafel, falafel.
Yeah. I was like, whoa, did everyone talk? Was that like that was a regional thing from where she was at in the United States? Or that
touch my pussy, daddy.
Yeah, that's how they talk. That's her most famous line.
It's a line from the movie, yeah.
It's from the movie, Touch My Pussy, Daddy.
He has an autographed picture that says, touch my pussy, daddy. Love you. Love you, Kathy.
Put your cigar in it. It's wet.
Thanks for the flyby.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Like one plane that he built that was crazy that he built in the late 1940s. It was a sealed cabin plane.
It's the other plane that he built that's crazy.
Right. You're right. He called it the Stratoliner, and it had this deluxe interior with a bar, a kitchen, a powder room, bedrooms, like individual bedrooms, all these crazy amenities, and built it, flew it, everything worked. He was going to sell it to different airlines, but they were like, this thing is way too expensive and it's never going to work. And then he sold us some crazy Texan, and apparently it got destroyed in a hurricane. Like it was just docked and it got jacked up in a hurricane. But then again, it's all weird. Like the Hughes stuff is weird. So it got destroyed in a hurricane. But then apparently I read in a completely different article that some guy ended up buying it from a salvage yard for like $90. Like the remnants of this destroyed thing. And it was still like this crazy 40s glamorous whatever inside. And he turned it into a giant houseboat.
Nice.
So now he lives in the Stratoliner that Howard Hughes built. And it cost him $100 to buy it.
Well, I bet turning it into a boat
was a little bit more expensive. Yeah. But then his most famous plane, and this is the plane I had always heard of associated with him before I even knew anything about him, was the Spruce Goose.
Right. And I've been to it.
Have you?
Yeah.
Where is it in?
Isn't it by the? It's by the Queen Mary somewhere. It's somewhere in the same area, I think.
I don't think it is anymore.
Is it? Well, I think when I went, it
when
was.
You went, it was because I had read that it was in a at the. Because I had read two. I saw that it was at the Evergreen Aviation Museum. And then someone said in McMinnville, Michigan. And then in another article, it said that it was in Oregon.
I've never seen it. When I was little. I'm almost certain. I mean,
I don't know.
But that wasn't the Spruce Goose.
It's a huge plane. I think your mom took you down and it was just a goose.
It was the Spruce Duck.
Yeah. It was just a goose.
I just saw a picture.
Yeah.
Isn't this impressive? You were watching DuckTales or something.
I think that might be what it was.
It was Tailspin.
Tailspin, yeah.
But the Spruce Goose was formerly called the H-4 Hercules. And again, this was a war contract that he got to build the plane. And the goal was to build a plane that could carry 700 troops or 60 tons of cargo. And one of the big problems in World War II is whenever you were getting troops to or from, they had to sail on a ship. And it was a lengthy tour because there weren't any planes that could really cover that efficiently to move enough troops to make it worth it. So they tried to have this thing built. The I mean, 700 troops on a plane. That's a fucking big ass plane, yeah, man.
It's a lot.
But so it's a 320 foot wingspan. It was the largest plane ever built at the time. The Senate called him into a hearing because it wasn't meeting deadlines. And he actually said after the hearing, quote, "I put the sweat of my life into this thing. I have my reputation rolled up in it. And I have stated several times that if it's a failure, I'll probably leave this country and never come back. And I mean it."
Yeah, it was like his closing line at that trial.
Yeah.
The crazier thing, the reason it's called the Spruce Goose, you know why?
Because it's made out of spruce.
It's not made out of spruce.
It's not made out of spruce. It's spruce
made out,
in it.
It's made out of goose.
But it's made out of wood.
Made out of wood.
Because aluminum was a strategic metal at the time of the war, and he couldn't get his hands on aluminum.
Right.
So they were trying everything they could. Balsa and then he wood. Was like, well, I don't know. They made Spanish galleon boats are made out of wood. They're like, yeah, but they weigh a ton. Like, figure it out. They made that thing out of wood. And
but he had made earlier, he had made a fighter plane that was made out of like wood and glue as a resin because it was lightweight and all this stuff. And it ended up being, I mean, and they tested it and it flew and it was fast, but he only ever built one and it got struck by lightning in a storm and caught on fire because it was made out of wood.
Just turned into a fucking fireball.
So right before the Spruce Goose though, he made something called the XF-11. Did you see that?
Mm-hmm.
That's that spy plane that I was talking about. When he crashed, he like crashed over Beverly Hills. Like, there was a military of people present for the contract to be like, okay, let's see it. Like the whole Tony Stark thing where three generals show up and you fly the plane. He insists on flying the plane, but he loves it so much because it goes so fast that he's gone for like an hour and 45 minutes. And they're like, hey, we need you to bring it back. He's like, give me 10 more minutes. And they're like, negative. You need to bring it back. Like, there's fuel wise, you got to bring it back. And then the some seal blows up in the engine and he ends up crashing over like Beverly Hills. And he's trying to make it to like a golf course, but it goes through like three houses before it stops. All the wings get ripped off. It catches on fire. But his injuries were so crazy. He had, let me see where it's at. He had crushed collarbone, multiple cracked ribs, crushed his chest and collapsed his lung and shifted his heart to the right side. Like, he crushed himself so bad, his heart moved to the side, but he continued to, he recovered so miraculously that the doctors were like, we don't understand how he owed his miraculous recovery to fresh squeezed orange juice. He said that the orange juice wasn't fresh in the hospital and he insisted on them cutting and squeezing the oranges bedside. And then he drank it immediately after the oranges, but something was to it because
his heart moved back.
Then he had like a whole staff in the hospital and he engineered a new hospital bed because he was in so much pain because he had burns on like 70% of his body. In addition to the other injuries like that he listed,
suspension bed
he
or
had
something.
That's why he has his mustache, because he had stitches across his face because he had several lacerations to the bone on his face. But he designed a bed. He employed engineers to make a bed that was equipped with hot and cold water, 30 electric motors with push button adjustments, and it's actually what the current hospital beds are based off of his original concept design. He never actually got to use it, but he was trying to design that bed because he didn't know how long he'd be there and he wanted to continue conducting business. And while he was in the hospital, they were like, yeah, they said they're not buying the plane. You know what I mean? He's like, I flew for an hour and 45 minutes just fine. And that thing, and they're like, no, that's gone. And then his fleet of 40 TWAs got grounded as well at the same time. And so the only thing he had left was a Spruce Goose. And they're like, how close are we? And they were like, 6 months. He's like, no.
Take the brown steering wheel,
like,
damn it.
Tell me. He said, don't tell me in time. Tell me in money. And they're like, $7 million. He's all, build it. And so, and then he sat there and drank orange juice and fucking got back to good while they built, while they spent $7 million
more. This guy is a crazy person.
He's a gangster.
He is a gangster.
He was crazy.
Yeah, he was crazy.
Crazy's coming. We're almost there. Yeah.
So then the Spruce Goose, like, no one will fly it because no one thinks it will fly.
They and had this to is, cut power lines. Did you see how they transported it?
Yeah.
Yeah. The wings were so big, they had to cut the power lines down as it was moved and then reconnect the power because it was so big you couldn't get, it was five stories tall. They just cut the telephone pole.
It's kind of what they had to do, like when they retired the fleet of space shuttles. I remember when the shuttle was going through LA to its museum, they had to like shut down streets and reinforce bridges because it wasn't ready for that weight, and they had to move power poles and do all this shit. But
it was five times the size of any other airplane.
The Spruce Goose.
Mm-hmm.
What was that an impression of?
It's five times the size of any other lichen.
No. I got you.
Brent doesn't watch scary movies.
I got you.
Werewolves.
So yeah, he ends up, no one will fly it because fuck that thing.
Right.
And of course, and this is after he's recovered from this other horrible crash. He's like, I'll fly it. And he fucking gets in that son of a bitch and flies it. So and
the whole reason that trial stuff happened, though, there's like a battle between him and Pan Am, like who, basically they threaten him like, that they're going to do this investigation. They dug up all kinds of dirt on him about those government contracts and not like, and those funds, nothing coming of millions and millions of dollars.
Right.
Well, it's because Pan Am's trying to get,
but they
contracts.
Tell him, if Pan Am, cause he has a plan for those 40 planes to do, international flights. And so like TWA actually wasn't even called TWA. Well, it was called TWA, but it stood for something else. And he changed it to like Trans World.
Right.
Yeah. And because he's super smart and he didn't want to repaint the planes, he made like the acronym work.
Right.
But Pan Am was the only one doing international flights at the time. So they were like hard on him to say, just sell it. Like, you're in trouble. We're going to expose you publicly. They knew that he had those little OCDs and stuff. Like, there's actually a scene in the movie where they go in and they put a thumbprint on the glass. And where he's going to sit before they have
to drive him crazy and distract him.
They have the meeting, like in the courtroom, they like put lights on, they turn on lights. I don't know if this part really happened, but in the courtroom scene, he sits down, they turn on these super bright lights and the guys on the, he's on defense. So the other attorneys pull out sunglasses and put on sunglasses because they were made aware that there would be these extra bright lights in the courtroom. I don't know if that part's real, but they did a bunch of weird little things to try to aggravate his tics during the process of that trial.
Well, at the end of the day, though, with the TWA thing, after he gets in trouble and the government investigates and everything, he has to sell all of his shares of TWA.
But he made $546 million.
$546 million in the 40s?
Yeah.
That's so much fucking money. Like, he was just... he was just loaded.
Billionaire, right? Again.
Like, and that transaction alone is why everyone thinks he was definitely worth $1.5 billion. Yeah. Because that holding got him a half a billion dollars.
Yeah.
And he still owns the mines. He still owns the oil company. He still owns the tool companies. He's still producing movies. He still owns real estate. Like, I mean, he's invested in all this stuff.
They did a public smear campaign to say, oh, you did this. You slept with this person. You didn't get anything for this money. But he's so intelligent. This is after his that trial all happens after his crazy recluse stint, which we should definitely talk about. Like, he locked himself in a room. Mm-hmm. Like, you read about this, right, Dave?
Yes.
Yeah, he locked himself in a room and lived solely off of like chocolate bars and milk
and chicken.
And chicken, yeah, and chicken.
Yeah. Yeah.
Peed in the milk bottles that he drank.
And this
set
was
him back outside the door.
And this was in Hollywood.
Right.
This is before he moved into Vegas.
Yep.
This is in Hollywood. He bought like all the studios and stuff that he owned. He sat in a screening room where you would watch the final cut of the movie, and he didn't leave the screening room for 4 months. He wouldn't leave to bathe. He would pee in bottles, and he only ate chicken milk and chocolate bars. And the people said that he was constantly asking for boxes of Kleenex because he would touch everything with Kleenex because he wouldn't want to touch anything because he was becoming a germaphobe. And every time they would come in to bring him food or something, all the Kleenex boxes were completely rearranged in different patterns and in all this different stuff.
And he had like super specific instructions. Like, when they came in, they weren't allowed to look at him. They weren't allowed to talk unless he talked first.
Right.
And they had a very like specific method. Like, when they brought in, he would be like, bring me the milk. And then they had to do it a certain way. Or like, if they brought him a bag, they had to hold it at a 45 degree angle. Like, he would write out manuals on the procedures the stuff that he's being handed so that he could reach into the bag and not touch the edges of the bag when he grabbed the food out of the bag. And if anything was done wrong, then the process would have to start over and they would go all the way back out.
It says this happened at the Desert Inn. So it would be in Las Vegas.
Well, he moved from the screening room to the Desert Inn. So that
went by rail car and then into the Desert Inn, and like that was fucking
I know he didn't bathe.
So the first 4 months he was in Hollywood at a screening room, and then he immediately left from there and went to the Desert Inn, and he stayed in the Desert Inn for years.
What I did not see, what I didn't read, what I didn't see in the movie is, where did he take a shit? Because he peed in those bottles, and if he was just eating milk and chocolate, maybe he's just peeing just from.
Well, like, he had a bathroom.
There was a bathroom inside the screening room.
Yeah, I'm sure there had.
And why is he peeing in the milk bottle?
Well, because he was obsessed with movies. And he didn't want to get up when a movie was playing.
Maybe he shit on the stage.
Maybe there was a sofa that he shit on. Was worried that people were going to clone him or something. It's why he wouldn't cut his hair or his fingernails, because there's genetic material in it. And he thought if they got a hold of his fingernails or his hair, they could make a clone of him.
Well, a lot of conspiracy theories start to kick off long around this point about why he went insane.
Right.
Like, I've even read some conspiracy theories that say that they think that he was one of the members of Majestic 12 that was involved in investigating UFOs.
Yeah.
Like all these different, and there's definitely some CIA stuff he did do. But when we're talking about the obsessions and his reclusiveness, he ends up, like, one thing I read is that he was obsessed with the size of his peas. So he would get peas on a plate, and he had a special fork that was designed specifically for him to move the peas around so that they were in the proper order from smallest to largest, and then he would eat the peas.
They did a scene in the movie where he has a steak. Shit. He goes to a restaurant, and he has a steak with, like, it's like 12 peas in a pattern on his plate, and this, like, asshole, like, super annoying guy sits down at the table, like, chomping his gum and talking fast, and he's like, he reaches over and grabs a pea off of his plate and pops it in his mouth. He's like, "What's up, Howard?" And it's just like, like, his OCD
glitch in the system.
He just starts like grunting, and he's just like, "I gotta go. I gotta be somewhere." And he's like, "You are somewhere." He's like, "I gotta be somewhere else." He just puts his steak down, drops the knife, gets up, and goes because he cannot deal with it.
Right.
They also did a scene in the bathroom where, like, he cuts his finger, and then he uses all the hand towels in the bathroom, and he ends up trapped in the bathroom because he cannot bring himself to grab the doorknob. So he just has to stand next to the door and wait for someone to open the
door.
Wait
for somebody else to open it for him.
Yeah. I do that at the movies.
They say that they think he had a condition called allodynia, which is a condition where things that normally aren't painful become painful.
I'm glad
to someone.
You said that, because I asked someone's opinion. I have an arrow pointed at that word right now because that was my next thing, but I was going to try to not butcher it. You probably said that perfect. I didn't know how to enunciate that.
I don't know if I did. I just winged it.
Yeah, but so he was Altadena.
Yeah, milk. Altadena. He was often, so, like, he was usually naked.
Yeah.
Like, in, because clothes would hurt him. He would let, one of the reasons that some
he
people
had nerve
think
issues.
It is his nails grew long were because he couldn't stand the feeling of getting his nails trimmed.
Yeah.
And all, which I can't either. I fucking hate that feeling.
Well, he probably had nerve damage from all the plane wrecks.
And I suspect brain damage.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody's like, we don't understand what happened after that big crash in 46. He just started acting all crazy. Yeah. It was like, oh, you mean the crash where his heart moved to the other side of his fucking body?
Yeah.
Like,
his heart was in his kneecap for like
Jesus
fucking 3
Christ.
Years.
I mean, I have a strong feeling that some brain damage
he hit
was
his head.
Part
you know, he wasn't wearing a helmet.
No, fuck no. Yeah. He was too dapper to wear a helmet. He had a scarf on. That was it.
Definitely a combination
my safety
of all
scarf.
Those things.
My part's going to save me.
He was just so intelligent that he was eccentric, you know, from the beginning, and then having the plane crashes and being, he had some OCD.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
just before we knew what OCD was.
That's the trait of genius people is to go crazy.
And part of the thing, like when he gets to Vegas, right, when he's driving through Vegas to get to his casino, he just likes the casinos. So he says he buys in 1 year, like the only slow part is just getting the paperwork done. Mm-hmm. He buys the Sands, the Desert Inn. Once he bought the Desert Inn, he then bought the Sands, the Stardust, the Castaways, the Silver Slipper, the Frontier, and the Landmark. He just said, fuck it, I'm buying all of it. And he had
then
this
he could
one
stay at whatever one he
exactly.
wanted to.
And there was a guy named Bob Mayhew who did all the sales with him. And he was like a huge, like, Vegas, like, real estate person. And he dealt with mobsters and he dealt with high rollers and millionaires and all this stuff. And he ended up becoming a friend of Howard Hughes because he was constantly negotiating all these real estate deals for him. And he even talks about the fact that I saw an interview with him, and Mayhew called Hughes after he was already living in the Desert Inn up in his place and he wouldn't go anywhere. And he was like, I need to meet with you about some of the stuff that's coming up. And he said that he was on the phone with him for 2 hours. And for 2 hours, Hughes just kept coming up with all these excuses of why you can't come up and see me.
Right.
And then finally he asked to speak to his assistant, and he told Hughes's assistant, like, I have all the keys to this building. Yeah. I'm going to come up right now and I'm going to unlock the door and I'm going to come in. I have to see Hughes.
Right.
And he put Hughes back on the phone, and he accounts Hughes starts crying and says, Mayhew, if you come up here right now, you are going to see what I've let myself become. And once you do, you will no longer represent me as powerfully as I need you to represent me.
Right.
So I am asking you not to come up and visit me.
Right.
And he said, okay.
and like didn't bother. He was like, I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
But like he said that he was crying and saying, don't come up here. I need you strong and fighting for me. And if you see what I look like right now, you're
going
to have a different opinion of what I am.
Because his nails were 3 feet long.
Because his nails are long and he hasn't shaved.
He looked like the ghetto black lady with the circle nails.
He was. He looked like fucking Mr. Burns at this point.
I read that he was largely responsible for modernizing like Las Vegas into what it has become like to date, rather than the Wild West crazy desert that it was. But it made me wonder, like, I didn't see any mob ties. Like, where does the mob come in? Like, how do you just go in and start buying casinos? Like,
he had to have mob ties. You don't do
but
that.
You don't show it. You don't talk about it.
I'm sorry. You're buying half the casinos in Vegas in 1966.
They're owned by the mob.
You're dealing with the mob.
About Vegas, you hear about the mob. You don't hear about Hughes. I wonder if Rob Van Dam knows some crazy like Howard Hughes stuff.
That's a good
stuff.
Point. We need to find out. Because he had to have been bumping it. I mean, he was buying casinos from mobsters.
Right.
And he was, end of discussion.
I wonder what face Rob gives us when we're like, hey, what do you know about Howard Hughes?
Oh,
let me tell you. And even like, so again, I mean, we're talking about an era. There's no such thing as a VCR. There's no such thing as whatever. And there were certain movies he wanted to see. So he bought a TV station and made it run 24 hours a day, and he would call the TV station and say, hey, at 1 a.m, air this movie, and they would cut whatever they were doing and air the movie that Mr. Hughes wants to watch.
That's
and he would sit in his hotel room and watch the movies he wants to watch, and he would just fucking have the films delivered to them to the TV station.
And then somebody got the idea. They're like, you know what we need to do? On demand.
There's a movie listed that he watched. He became obsessed with. I'm hesitantly like curious to go see what it is, but it's called Ice Station Zebra.
Yeah,
and it would be 1968.
Movie. Yeah,
I probably can't get through it, luckily, because maybe I get obsessed with
20%.
You'll get 20%.
150 times.
I saw it when I was a kid. If it's the movie I'm thinking of, it's a World War II movie. It's a good World War II movie. Yeah. But yeah,
it's
they said
really
he watched
shitty.
It 150 yeah. times.
They have a lot of white makeup on. And
yeah,
overly emotional about something.
Johnny. Yeah. I'm dying, Johnny.
Yeah, that kind of shit.
Tell my lady.
Throwing his hat off the ground. Yeah.
Yeah.
But he was obsessed with films, and he would watch them all day, every day. That was what he did, was watch films and cut business deals.
Apparently, when he was flying around the world, because they did a scene where Pan Am was like, the guy walks in, he's like, hey, Howard Hughes just took controlling interest of TWA. And they're like, what? I thought he's flying around the world. They're like, apparently he did it while he was flying around the world from a fucking CB or something. Yeah.
That might have been an exaggeration, though.
Maybe. That could be a dramatization as well.
Yeah, just to like give you the example of that's how he worked.
Yeah.
Right. For that matter, he might have put the paperwork in, got on the plane.
Yeah.
By the time I touch down in Paris, I'm going to own that fucker.
That would be cool. Yeah.
He was that kind of guy, though, where he was like, they were celebrating something. I saw the thing. He's like, we get to get in jet engines. They're like, right now? He's like, yes, right now. It's the future. Like, do it right now. And he's like, you mean right now, like at the party? Right now? He's like, yeah, get out of here. Start right now.
Go party. Yeah, party will be here later.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. He's like,
it's always a party.
Like, I'll throw you a party next week. Right
we'll
now,
have milk go start and, we'll on have milk engine. And chocolate bars.
maybe some Captain Crunch chicken.
You guys got to do that, Captain Crunch chicken.
Sounds good.
So the other thing is a connection with the CIA, and people take this and run with it. Conspiracy theorists run with this all over the place. But the account that I saw of what happened, and they call this Project Azorian, and this happened in 1968. So a Soviet nuclear sub disappeared in the Pacific. And the Soviets had spent 2 months looking for it. We knew it was missing. They knew it was missing. Just sub has disappeared. So it's obviously there's been a breach. It has sunk. Mm-hmm. Everybody's dead, but no one can reach it or find it or whatever. The Soviets look for it for 2 months and can't find it. Eventually, I guess the Americans found it. It was 1,500 miles west of Hawaii, and it was 16,000 feet below the surface. And the U.S. government commissioned a craft that could go down and retrieve the sub, which had to be a hell of a craft.
I think it was floating on the surface and winched it up, because the way they describe it, because the submarine ends up breaking in half.
Okay, that
and
makes
they
sense.
Lose
that
the critical portion that they were after.
So they create this craft,
but the
and
nuclear
it's part
portion,
of,
yeah,
yeah, basically, they and they call it Project Azorian. And they have a cover story that Hughes agreed to. So the CIA at some point had to talk to Howard Hughes and say, hey, the Soviet sub has sunk. They're watching everything we do, like with a microscope, because they want to see what's going on. So the idea here is you need to act like this ship that we're using is a new ship that you invented. And they even called it the Hughes Glomar Explorer.
Right.
And they said that it was his attempt to start doing deep sea mining. And he was looking for some specific metal. I forget what, magnesium, something new. He was looking for a specific metal.
Did the Russians not know where their sub went down? Like, they don't know.
They couldn't find it. Like, they didn't know. But so as soon as it was, Howard Hughes was sending a mining craft that was going to be, you know, sending buckets right. down to the bottom to get mineral samples, et cetera. The Soviets weren't watching that ship anymore, because even Howard Hughes made announcements. My ship is going out. I'm doing all this stuff. It wasn't his ship. He didn't design it. He didn't own it. He had nothing to do with it. It was an entire U.S. government CIA thing. But they ended up knowing if we get Howard Hughes to act like he did it,
that makes no one's sense.
Maybe they should have let him take the blueprints, because maybe when they dropped half the sub, it would have taken 6 months longer and $8 million more dollars, but you get the whole sub. And it has a really cool steering wheel.
Yeah, that boat handrail that's yellow, I can't have the handrail.
But they tried to winch it up. They got half the sub. The other half broke off with all the parts that they needed. And then apparently there was a break-in of the Hughes Soma Corporation in 1975, and the documents about the CIA stuff got discovered in this break-in. So this became a news story in 75, even though it was all happening in the 60s. But so there are definite connections with the CIA, and everybody kind of freaks out about that. And I'm like, well, look, Jesus Christ, this guy was building experimental aircraft for the U.S.
the
government
CIA needed
for
him.
Decades.
Yeah.
And I think like, why would he not be involved with U.S. intelligence?
He was a bit of a patriot, I think, too, because he purchased RKO, controlling interest of RKO Studios, which is like a famous studio back then, made all those movies. He immediately let like 70% of the staff go or something, and then suspended any production of any movies or any films pending a 6-month investigation to ensure that there were no communist ties of any actor or employee involved with RKO Studio until he was satisified. Then he resumed production.
Past podcasts, that was big back then. The Communist Party was huge. Yeah. Like,
well, I know they used that reference too in something else, because I think it was Katharine Hepburn left him or something and was dating another guy, but she was married. The guy was married, and pictures surfaced as a reporter, and he blackmailed the reporter because the reporter had attended communist meetings or something. And that was his leverage to get the pictures back, because he offered the guy like 10,000 shares in TWA, but he ultimately had to threaten him with the Communist Party thing. Which is, I mean, you're not going to take 10,000 shares, but then he's like, I'm going to tell about the comment. Oh, shit. Oh, like, shit. That must have been a finish.
Can I get the 10,000 shares now? No, motherfucker. Oh, you fucked up.
Nope, you should have done it. So Hughes ends up getting older and crazier, and apparently he was in constant chronic pain. So he became addicted to various pain pills.
He would intermuscularly inject codeine.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, just fucking straight fun. to the
point,
muscles.
On his autopsy, they did an x-ray, and there were 5 hypodermic needles in his body found in the x-ray.
Yeah.
Sounds like Harrow's Inn.
Yeah, because he was so out of it, he probably couldn't even feel him. I mean, he was either high on the codeine or in so much fucking pain anyway.
Maybe that's why he was in pain. He just had needles in him.
Yeah, they would have gotten
like
rid of
the 20s.
Needles.
Yeah, they just were in there. Like, he's like, damn it, I heard all the time. And needles then floating around.
At some point, he leaves Vegas in the mid-70s, and he starts staying at various, like, you know, posh hotels, mostly through the Caribbean.
Slowly fading into crazy. Like, yeah, he took off to, like Nicaragua or some crazy place. Did you see the guy that tried to do the unauthorized biography on him?
Or yeah. Really? Where did I?
That's
I
Clifford Irving.
It was a hoax.
He was banking on the fact that he was such a recluse, he wouldn't come out publicly like to refute it.
Yeah. Right.
And he almost got away with it if it wasn't for those meddling kids. And
that's right. That's no, it was,
dog.
Yeah, it was in 72. And I mean, if it tells you how much people had an interest in Howard Hughes, he had in 1972, Clifford Irving got a $750,000 advance on the book.
Right.
Like, that's unheard of right now. You're not going to get a $750,000 advance on a book. That's a fucking lot of money for a book.
That's a fucking lot of money.
I mean, and that's an advance. That's McGraw-Hill was the one who did the book. And I can say this because McGraw-Hill published my first book.
Right.
And my advance was the last digit in 750,000.
Zero.
That's correct. Actually, it's several of the digits, it's all the low ones.
All the last four. Yeah.
And we were offered an advance, but the advance is we're going to pay you money to help you write the book. But then once you start making money from the book, you pay this back before you get any royalties. Oh, right.
It's like a studio recording artist. You know, you get $1 million recording deal, but guess what? You got to pay them back.
You have to pay it back.
Before you make any money.
And they did all, I can't remember how much. They offered us an advance of some sort, but we were like, fuck it, we don't need the money right now. We're writing the book already. Yeah. We'll just get it when we get it. Otherwise, if the book is a complete fucking failure, we just owe these motherfuckers money. I'm like, I'll pass.
Yeah, you could be fucked.
You know. So he had a 700, but he ended up doing 17 years in prison. Apparently the Hughes Tool Company
That is a big difference.
The Hughes Tool Company came out and said, this is a fake. And then ultimately Howard Hughes himself did a telephone press conference that said this isn't real. And that's what ended up busting. And I guess there was a movie in 2006 called The Hoax that starred Richard Gere and he played this author.
There's another film called F for False that they talked about it in as well, I guess.
Oh, about that, about that thing. So he ends up like in that thing. I had it in my notes, like where he traveled after he left Vegas. He went to like Aruba, and I shouldn't have said that.
Freeport, Grand Bahama.
I know we went to London for a little bit, Nicaragua, the Bahamas, Acapulco.
Xanadu Beach Resort.
Nicaragua is what I meant to say.
Grand Bahama Island is where he was at.
So he ends up leaving Vegas and traveling around, and he's always traveling in a private jet, and he's just fucking Mr. Burns status.
Yes, that's just a good example.
Like just ate up and fucking, I mean, and granted, keep in mind, he was born in 1905 and this is like 78. So he's getting up there in age. And he ends up dying on a Learjet as he's flying. And I read multiple reports of how he died. One thing I read said that it was kidney failure. One thing that I read said that it was a heart attack. One thing that I said was that it was multiple things caused by mass malnutrition. Did you guys find anything?
Multiple needles in his system.
Yeah. It was all of
that's
that.
What I heard.
He was when they at his time of death, he's 6'4" and he was 90 pounds.
Ooh. Yeah, that's mal. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kidney shut down.
Because he lived off of like banana ice cream. And milk. Yeah.
No, he got tired of that.
Yeah. He switched over to something
banana
else.
Nut ice cream. Yeah.
But he looked so crazy because he was 6'4", 90 pounds. He had not cut his hair and fingernails. Like he had like Jesus hair and Freddy Krueger fingernails. That the FBI to identify his body had to use his fingerprint.
So you're saying he looked like Wolverine.
Yeah. To identify him. Nah, Wolverine's all buff, dude.
Well, if Wolverine got fatigued.
If you changed Wolverine completely, gave him long exactly hair, like, made him look like Howard Hughes with a pencil mustache. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
That's exactly what I said.
Yeah, but they couldn't even identify his body. He was so malnourished and sickly and crazy with his long fingernails and hair.
And then as soon as he died, like all these, there was no will that they could find easily.
I think he had his will from when he was 19.
He had his will
from when he was 19. So you're saying he had his own Holocaust is what you're saying. That's what you're telling me.
I don't know what's happening.
I don't know what's happening either.
That's for awkward moments.
That was.
It wasn't awkward.
But a simple question. Like all these people started to come out of the woodwork with like fake wills.
I sort of get
the
Holocaust thing. I'm sorry. I sort of get it now. He was just all ate up and like emaciated and whatnot. So he was a little Holocaust. I get it.
Oh, I get it. Okay.
You can't take the bell back. What's a backwards bell noise sound like?
I don't know. Ding. I don't know.
Gind. I don't know.
Leb.
So one guy.
Leb.
One guy. It was a gas station attendant, and he claimed that he showed up with a 3-page document that said that he was supposed to inherit 1/16th of Hughes' fortune. A guy named Melvin DeMar, because he once picked up Hughes on the side of the road and gave him a ride to his hotel, and Hughes was so grateful that he gave him a huge chunk of money, but that was thrown out as a complete fake and a forgery.
I thought he got it. I heard a story somewhere that he picked him up halfway between Vegas and somewhere else and took him one way or the other, and that the guy had a claim based off a verbal agreement and that he got the money. No,
well, in 70 they threw it out, so maybe he got it and then they turned it over in 78.
He's probably no,
because he died in 76. So he died on April 5th, 1976. a bunch of his multiple girlfriends came out claiming that they had been married during the reclusive days.
And I just found this. It says a further $156 million was endowed to a gas station owner named Melvin Dumar, who told reporters that late one evening in December 1967, he found a devilishly dirty man among the U.S. Highway 95, 150 miles out. That it says it was awarded right here.
Yeah, but the thing that I
read, they overturned it.
In 1978, they overturned it.
Yeah. That's because I only read like 60% of the thing. I didn't get to the
end. He didn't get to that. Right below that, it says that it was overturned in 78. Yeah, right there.
Yeah, June 9th,
78. So,
the Mormon will, yeah.
Yeah.
A bunch of fake kids showed up. One of them that I read.
Are they really adults?
Of a woman. Yeah, they were adults by this point, but she said that she was the daughter of him and Amelia Earhart.
Oh, wow.
And had a will, and they threw that one out. The funniest one that I read was that two of the people that showed up were half black. They were little mulatto children, and the judge instantly threw both of them out of court because Hughes was a notorious racist who hated all black people.
That doesn't mean anything, though, because Andrew Jackson was a racist too, and he had black kids.
I just thought that was really, it was like the judge is like,
I'll tell you what,
this black kid, nope.
I don't think there's a black person in the movie Aviator. I'm trying to think right now.
Probably not. I'm sure there was someone with white gloves on giving out food to somebody.
All blacks are communists.
That's right. So then when he died, I kept reading complete contradictory reports about what happened with his final money, because I read that the bulk of it went to the Hughes Medical Institute, and then some other stuff I would read say the bulk of it went to family members, and
well, give them
kind of went back and forth.
So the Mormon will they found on the desk of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in Utah, right? That's what it says on Wikipedia.
I didn't hear about this one.
So it says they call it the Mormon will.
That's the one that was overturned in 78.
It says 1.56 billion various charitable organizations. So 625 million went to the Hughes Medical Institute. 470 million went to upper management in Hughes companies, which that sounds cool. And then 156 million went to first cousin, William Loomis, $156 million, was split equally between two ex-wives, Ella Rice and Jean Peters.
And I know that there was another ex-wife named, I forget, there was another ex-wife, but she did a settlement way back in the day for $7,000 a month for the rest of her life. She didn't have a claim on anything because she had already settled, basically.
Right.
That's not bad, though.
No.
What was it, $7,000 a month?
$7,000 a month, like starting in the 40s.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's like, fucking like $20,000 a month.
Yeah, come on, I can deal with that. You know?
I mean, even $7,000, even if she lived into the 2000s.
That's like, still
you're
all
still,
right.
You're still doing okay.
You're still doing like, just fine.
I used to want to win that weekly grand so bad. They had that like lotto ticket or something. You could win $1,000 a week.
$1,000 a week.
Yeah, but for 20 years.
Yeah, that's supplement.
Yeah, it's $4,000.
That's good money.
You played your cards right.
So yeah, and I know that a lot of it did go to the Hughes Medical Institute, and it's still an institution. And most, I mean, like a lot of his companies still exist, and they are still running and still doing their thing. But yeah, so he was about as rich as it gets. He was about as crazy as it gets. He was about as big of a playboy as it gets. He was about as big of a risk taker and adventurer as it gets. Like Howard Hughes was just fucking legit.
He did everything. Yeah, at the top.
If he did it, he was doing it 100%. Yeah, I got nothing but love for Howard Hughes. And again,
he was crazy.
If you dig deep, you can find all kinds of conspiracy theories. As soon as the Project Azorian comes in and you start to see stuff with the CIA, they start to spin to other CIA stuff.
Anybody as secretive and crazy as he was, like there's going to be.
I was trying to find something, like I tried to understand it and I couldn't. But something, there was some connection with a chunk of money that someone from Hughes gave to Nixon, and they tried to make this connection that gave to someone opposing Nixon, and that specific detail was one of the things Nixon was looking for at the Watergate hotel break-ins. And
yeah, $205,000 loan from Hughes, Donald.
to Nixon's brother,
to his brother Donald. Yeah.
So there's lots of things like that. You're gonna, if you dig deep, someone that powerful, you're gonna start finding conspiracy theories, and some of them are gonna be true and some of them aren't. But I mean, he definitely had dealings with the CIA, with national government, with the U.S. Air Force. I mean, this is who he worked with and for many years. And he was like this strangely patriotic. Like, I mean, granted, he was a bit of a narcissist, and he was building these airplanes so he could be the first one to fly them, and he could break a bunch of records. But a lot of the stuff he was building, he was trying to build for the war effort. He was just too crazy to pull it off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Final thoughts on Hughes?
Crazy. And
definitely.
It might be my future without all the money.
Yeah.
And
yeah, that's what I kept,
minus
yeah.
money and Playboy. Just fairly intelligent, but really fucking crazy.
Basically, after you're dead, you'll be the same. Like, you just, because you won't have any money after you're dead.
Finally lose that weight.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, that's a little too skinny.
That's true.
When Brent's fingernails just start growing longer,
that won't happen, dude. I'm the opposite.
If it hurts to cut them,
nah.
Then yeah,
I'm the opposite. I cannot have any white on my nails. I cut that shit off, so I do have a fingernail thing.
He'll be famous.
You're the opposite. You're like reverse. You're poor. You don't have any fingernails. You know, it's the opposite. It's reverse Howard Hughes.
Maybe I'll be okay then.
He's going to be famous for only drinking quads with heavy cream. El Yucateco hot sauce and
Captain
Crunch chicken.
Cup.
Those are his only three. His only three food items.
Drive through Starbucks and hand them a pee cup.
I'm digging on here because I was supposed to give someone a shout.
Smells like coffee.
All right, you want to do some sponsors?
Sure, if you guys want me to. Should I do that now? Now's the time for that?
Yes.
All right, thank you to El Yucateco Hot Sauce. Thank you to...
Who's next?
Dark
Side Graphics.
Fingernails. I'm pulling Brad's awkward
I'll fucking
thing.
Cut this shit off. Don't be a retard.
Entering Life Sequence 5.
Walk with me this way, you'll see this giant spread of all the substances you could abuse. And if you look to the left, well, you know. I tried a lot of drugs, I tried a lot of ladies. Some I probably wouldn't have tried if I wasn't on drugs. Been living sober lately, sure, some fans will hate me. Still see bugs crawling on me, it's time I think it's skating. Miss, don't hate the player, I'm on the bench now. But when they call me back and it's back too, I don't care. The snake spoke to Eve in the garden. These days trees are fruitless, snakes are starving. Pretty little rabbit saw me for carrots, folks. Before Jim Carrey, she wore a mask like Eric Stoltz. I'm not insane, no, my life's a game show. I shot for the stars, miss, so now I aim low. If you don't hear back from me, I probably got some shit on my dick and afraid a doctor gonna laugh at me. I'm just playing paranoia, fucks with the mind. This hook is stuck on my cheek, let me pull it out for real this time. If you don't hear back from me, it's probably cause my record flopped and my life is a catastrophe. If you don't hear back from me, it's probably cause them doctors with hypodermics are still after me. If you don't hear back from me, probably cause I'm dead to the world, literally an atrophy. If you don't hear back from me, it's probably cause I ran off with a band and shot me up with some smack for free. I got a little buzz, I went a little crazy, said everything I said on movies because of my buzz. I lost my brain before I rap, no allowance, fake sneakers, walked into a world of crap. Sold pieces for Puma's Golden Knights, walked and talked like a rap star but was white and couldn't write. Before girls, the acne came, I had a fade spitting to me, PMD meets Big Daddy Kane. Unlike the judge who cracked his hammer gently, sent me to be evaluated in the hospital, kept me. I came home to make music weirder than Daylights, but Bobito knew I was butters like Professor Chaos. From then to now was a blank, cause my memory bank is crawling with skanks like Hillary Swank. No disrespect, but your name rhymed home me until my final destination. Death can blow me. If you don't hear back from me, it's probably cause my record flopped and my life is a catastrophe. If you don't hear back from me, it's probably cause them doctors with hypodermics are still after me. If you don't hear back from me, it's probably cause I'm dead to the world, literally an atrophy. If you don't hear back from me, probably cause I ran off with a band and shot me up with some smack for free. I climbed through dirt to get my name known and shit when I jumped on a track like Waymo and spit. This party's going to hell with blunts to the death, yakking on Moose roof while he's waving guns at his guests. Don't pass that shit, don't throw me a lighter. I put more flakes behind my face than Tony the Tiger. I wasn't hearing
hearing what I said, left my ear on the stage, puked up on the fan, the last of incoherent cage. Shit ain't quit PCP, it quit me. Reality rolled me up, took two puffs, then clipped me. I snitched on a drug and got away lovely. Told him Johnny dip from hell, cops at 21 Dunk Street. You talk tough, then why you shaking like maracas? Put a gun in your hand, you won't murder like B.A. Baracus. I need a new drug to make me okay, and a place to keep my shit when they come and take me away.